Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Welcome back to the show. Now we're going to revisit a conversation I had last January with Wes Moore. In 2010, he published a best-selling book, The Other Wes Moore, which told the story of his childhood and early adulthood, as well as that of another young man who grew up in Baltimore in the same neighborhood and, coincidentally, with the same name. Their outcomes, however, couldn't have been more different. One Wes Moore was convicted of murder and imprisoned for life, while the Wes Moore I spoke with graduated from Johns Hopkins University, went on to be a Rhodes Scholar, became a decorated war veteran, an investment banker, a White House fellow, an entrepreneur, and a television host. His latest book picks up his story where the other Wes Moore left off. It's called The Work: My Search for a Life That Matters. When we spoke last January here on Maryland Morning, I asked him to talk about the metrics he uses to decide whether or not one is, in fact, living a life that matters.
Well, so part of the thing that was so exciting for me, even in this whole journey, was even just coming up with that exact question, like, what is the definition? And how I even try to lay out the definition of the work is it's when your greatest gifts and your greatest contributions and your greatest joys begin to start overlapping with the world's greatest needs. And then you choose to actually do something about it. And I remember this conversation I was having with the publisher. This was, you know, probably a couple years after The Other Wes Moore was released. And they said, well, would you be interested in writing about your success after the publication of the book? Because they felt that so much of The Other Wes Moore was about, you know, the difference in the space between success and failure, that they wanted to say maybe this one could be something about dealing with success. And I remember when they said it, it kind of took me aback, because the bigger question that I actually wanted to ask was, what does success even mean in the first place? You know, because right now we can talk about listing off accomplishments or listing off LinkedIn profiles. But if it doesn't matter the work that you're doing, if you're not actually making impact on the lives of others, then are you really truly being successful? And are you really doing it as what you're supposed to be doing? And so that was the mark that I tried to use, and just the standard that I tried to show with all these other people and all these other profiles that we list out in the book.
Right, because you talk not just about your own journey, but about folks who have influenced you and the work that they're all doing around the world. And I should mention that you also include a really extensive appendix, a resource guide, with a list of organizations and a description of the work that they do that folks, you know, might get some ideas about becoming involved in. That's a really great thing about the book. Couple weeks after September 11th, 2001, you find yourself in London to begin work as a Rhodes Scholar. You've just graduated from Hopkins. You had graduated prior to that from Valley Forge Military College. So you've gotten these two very different kinds of educations, and you're in for yet another different kind of education at Oxford. Talk about what you studied at Oxford and how that's shaped what you've done since that time.
Yeah, it was an amazing experience because I studied international relations. And to study international relations right after 9/11 in Oxford, a university that was founded, you know, 400 or 500 years before the United States was founded, was fascinating. Because also, not only was I one of five Americans in my course, so I mean, I was studying international relations with Iranians and Brits and Germans and Zimbabweans and Chinese. So you're really seeing international relations from a context that is completely different from the one that you had studied and understood before. You're also now studying it at a time when the nation and much of the world was now going into a state of war. And so it added a whole new context. I mean, we flew over to the UK on September 23rd of 2001. We were one of the first transatlantic flights that was allowed. And I remember many of the soldiers who I trained with, because I joined the Army right out of high school. And many of the soldiers who I trained with were now getting ready to head overseas as well. But while I was getting ready to head overseas to, you know, to do high tea and to drink port with my dons, they were getting ready to head overseas to head to Afghanistan and then soon later on Iraq. And so there was this large mosaic of emotions that I took on while I was honored and blessed and thankful for this opportunity that I now had to go study. In many ways, my heart and my soul was elsewhere. And that definitely helped to shape that entire experience.
Because after you left Oxford, you did investment banking in London for a little while, but it's clear that your heart was never really in that at that time. And you say, and then you deployed to Afghanistan in 2001. 5, and you write that you did it for a mix of reasons. One was loyalty to the institution that had saved you and to the friends that you trained with, plus a sense that in the wake of 9/11, you had a part to play in making things right. As you look back on those decisions and that experience now, given what else we know about the so-called war on terror, what are your reflections about what our response to that issue has been?
You know, I think about that, and even when I was doing the work with PBS, this miniseries called Coming Back with Wes Moore, we really wanted to understand what does the redeployment process mean to the 2.6 million people that have actually been fighting in these wars. And it was fascinating to think that we are now coming off of our nation's longest wars, in terms of combat operations and sustained combat operations for our country. And I feel like in many ways we still haven't even fully come to grips with not just the impact of the wars, but then the impact of the people who, the warriors who've been overseas fighting them for so long. I remember the wave of emotions that people had after 9/11, the wave of emotions people had after the initial time we went to Afghanistan and then later on Iraq. And I just find it to be incredibly important that as we think about this in a historical context, our reaction, our response, the combination of military and non-military, kinetic and non-kinetic operations that existed, we have to be able to think very clearly and honestly about what is that role and how and what can we learn about these things for future conflicts and future operations. I mean, something I think we all learned as we're overseas fighting, is that there's never going to be a kinetic solution to what's happening. There's never going to be a purely military solution to what's happening overseas. You're never going to, quote unquote, win in Afghanistan militarily alone, or Iraq, or Syria, or Yemen, or anywhere else that we're talking about. If you don't have the other non-kinetic supports that are then playing a role that is tantamount to anything military, then you're simply just going to be wasting time and money and a lot of human treasure on something that you cannot come up with a full sense of accomplishment for. So I think there are some incredibly important lessons that we just don't even see learned solely for historical context, but as the world continues to turn now, that we have to make sure we're applying to our response to these issues.
On 88.1, I'm Tom Hall. We're listening to a conversation I had last January with Wes Moore about his latest book, The Work, My Search for a Life That Matters. After a career in the military, work in investment banking, and a stint as a White House fellow, Wes Moore came to prominence with the publication of his memoir, The Other Wes Moore. The second book is a continuation of that first memoir, and it also includes stories about some of the people who are doing the kind of work that Wes Moore admires. Wes is regularly included on lists of people who would be possible candidates for political office. When Senator Barbara Mikulski announced her retirement, many wondered if Wes would seek that office. With the mayoral election coming up next spring, people have urged him to enter that race as well. He has not entered either contest. In January, with the publication of his second volume of his memoir, I asked him if he were considering running for any political office.
I am running. I'm running Bridge EDU, which is our the platform that's helping to address the college completion crisis by reinventing the freshman year. And you know, I'm a person who I am solely focused on impact. I am not at all focused on a job title. I'm not at all focused on a business card.
Are you open to the idea of politics? Are you open to the idea of running for elective office?
Well, I think you never want to eliminate anything as an option, but I just don't think that you have that as a goal. Right. I think your goal is what can I do to most and best impact a problem? You know, I really want to be a problem solver. I mean, I think that's how I've just tried to live my life. And I think it makes it a more interesting life. I mean, I know people with no titles that do extraordinary work. And I know people that really with really big titles that, frankly, do absolutely nothing with those titles. So, I mean, I think the thing that I'm zeroing in and focusing on is really how can I make a larger impact on the world that we live in?
Well, at some point, I do want to have you back so we can talk a lot about Bridge EDU. It's a terrific program. But I'm also interested in this book, but as we say, you tell not just your story, but the story of others, stories of others who have inspired you. I want to talk about one of those because we only have time for one, unfortunately. It's a guy named Joe Manko, and he's a principal here in Baltimore at Liberty Elementary School. Tell us about the work that Joe is doing.
Joe is amazing. So Joe's a Californian who actually came to Baltimore because of love. and he was following a girl who he ended up breaking up with months after coming to Baltimore.
Stuff happens.
But
he's, you know?
Stuff happens, right? Stuff happens. But as Joe puts it, he stayed because of love. He stayed because he fell in love with Baltimore, and he fell in love with the students that he was serving. And Joe was, you know, first came here and he was teaching. And he said he realized very quickly that he's not a good teacher. He's like, I couldn't discipline the kids. I was a bad, bad teacher. He said, I knew I loved education, but I wasn't a good teacher. So he said, he thought to himself, what else can I do then to stay involved in education? And he realized that he was really good at administration. And eventually became, you know, a principal, an assistant principal, et cetera. And he was given a school called Liberty Elementary that he was going to be the principal of. And within a matter of years, he has turned Liberty Elementary into one of the top performing elementary schools in the entire city of Baltimore, where you have teachers all over the city who want to come and work at Liberty Elementary, some of the top teachers, and they want to work there because Joe Manko is the principal. And if you talk to Joe and you ask him about what makes his school so special or what makes his leadership so special, you know, he talks about how, you know, he keeps high expectations for all the kids, regardless of where they come from. And he also says that if you, you know, and one thing that you see at the beginning and at the end of every day, Joe is there at the door waiting to hug every single child that walks into his doors. And if you ask him why that's so important, he says, you know, one is he understands that for many of the kids who are in his school, that might be the first hug that they've gotten all day. And he says why that's so important is because he wants to let every single one of his kids know they're walking into a place of love, that they're walking into a place of support. And so Joe Manko firmly believes that he can change the world one hug at a time. And that's the beauty of Joe and Michael Hancock and Kara Alley and some of the other people that I feature that I'm inspired by inside of this book, inside of the work, is that regardless of whether what industry they're in, public sector, private sector, military, nonprofit, whatever it is, there are two things that all of them have in common. One is they all completely have lost themselves in a sense of service, in a sense of doing something good for others. And the other thing is they know that the only way that you will ever be great is if you care deeply about what you do. Joe cares deeply about his students, and that's incredibly inspiring to see him be so great at what he does.
Wes Moore, his new book is called The Work, My Search for a Life That Matters. Wes Moore's for-profit organization, Bridge EDU, is welcoming its next class of scholars in this new school year. The program is expanding. Last year, they worked with 18 students. Wes told me last month that this year, there are 150 new college students enrolled in Bridge EDU. If you come to WIPR.org/Maryland Morning, we'll shoot you a link with all the details. On 88.1, I'm Tom Hall. More coming up here on Maryland Morning with Sheila Cast. Stay with us.